You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs Program for Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host. Today we have with us Dorothea Ferris. And welcome, Dorothea.
Thank you.
You've had a long career in public service. For 12 years, you served in the Pitkin County Commissioner role. And with 19 prior years, you were with the Aspen School District Board. In 2008, you were appointed to the Colorado Wildlife Commission. And other positions include the West Elk Scenic Byway Committee, which you were a charter member of, and you're also a member of the Crystal Valley Environmental Protection Association. In a previous lifetime, you were a teacher, and you recently won the Hattie Thompson Award in 2016, a history award. And I know you, and I appreciate and respect you, but I got to looking at all your awards and what you've done. You've had an amazing career in life.
You know, if you just take advantage, I think, sometimes of those issues that you're interested in, you find yourself in the midst of other people who have similar interests and new ideas and so on. And when you put it all together, you have to join the group so you can accomplish something. And it's worked for me.
Well, I want to read a quote I think is really pertinent to why you're here today. And it says, "To me, the landscape of the West reflects the character and the strength of the men and women who call this land home. Its stark beauty suggests openness and honesty. Its sharp edges encourage directness. Its forest offers solace. Its clear skies demand clarity. Its mountains require risk. Evidence of past cultures and lifestyles mark the land." I think that's a really good quote from you. And also, also said, if we know and understand our past, we can use that knowledge to protect our land and preserve our lifestyle into the future. So history is important to you as well, isn't it?
Yes. We are in such a blessed place, I think, living here. And most of us have chosen this as a place to be. There are those who were born here and who never left, and they come from a history that dictates what we think, what we do, how we grow, what's important. And I think that creates the root system in our communities. I was fortunate enough to arrive in Aspen when it was just growing, taught in Carbondale for a couple of years after college, and did not grow up in the mountains, did not grow up in an open area. So to be in a place where you could be so free, not only in thought and action, but in what you could see, there was no confining any of that. So I've always felt blessed to be able to have selected or been selected by such a place.
Well, I think it can be said that you have a strong sense of place. The last two radio shows I did were about sense of place. And you do truly possess a true love for the land and the joy of learning. So my first question to you is, with all the time that you've had in dealing with land issues, what do you see has changed in today's world?
Too many of us trying to do more in smaller places. It's become very, very complex instead of just being able to be out and enjoy an environment. There seems to be a lack. What is lacking is that environmental ethic that I saw first when I got to Colorado. And I think with the numbers of people coming to appreciate our boundaries, there's a lack of an ethic because fewer people are out there all the time. Where I grew up, there were people who were afraid to be left in the woods. And here, we have the opportunity to camp and to be outdoors and to respect it. But I think we've forgotten how to say to respect the land, we really need to take care of it. So it's become an activity instead of just of course we're going to take care of it. And unless we take care of it, it's not going to be there. It will have so many rules and regulations. Do you really want to go to the Bells? No, I'm not going to take the bus. Do you really want to go to Conundrum? Well, I didn't register soon enough and there's no room. Did you enjoy your picnic at Hanging Lake? Well, there was no way out of the parking lot. We just have got to find ways to continue to appreciate all that we have here without damaging it for all of us.
Are making it too complex.
Or making it too complex. And I sincerely believe that young people especially, all people, but we need to provide the opportunity for our kids to just be outdoors with no rules, no games, just walking along, seeing what is there, and figuring out for themselves how it affects them.
Right. A few years ago, a man wrote a book called A Nature Deficit Disorder.
That's it.
And so I've said before on this program that used to, when I was a kid, we played outside so much we'd have to be called in for dinner even because we wanted to stay and play.
Mm-hmm. And we made up our own rules, which was really fun.
That made it nice, didn't it?
You learned how to deal with a lot of different people when you figured out each person's strength. And who should be in charge of what?
And to learn to play together. That
oh,
was
boy.
Important, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You've been called, among other things, an environmentalist, a tree hugger, a passionate, adventuresome, energetic, politically astute person. What guides you in how you deal with life, the land, and people?
Wow. On a nice high goal, I would like to say that I like to consider what each person really wants and put it together in a wonderful plan. But really, I think down deep inside, I want to know what works for me and what my goal is and how I can use the information to get to that goal. It's probably what most of us think. Not by doing harm to anyone else, but you have to look for what strengthens what you believe in rather than picking out the obstacle and fighting it. Sometimes there's no reason to bother to do that. You go around it, you go behind it, you drop it until you pick it up later.
You're a big believer in working together in the community and joining together to make things better, to make things happen, even with people that you don't always see eye to eye with. Is that a skill you learned in life? How do people do that?
I was fortunate in that I attended a high school that was superb. I was on a debate team in junior high school. I was an editor of the high school newspaper. I carried that through in experiences at college. My first teaching job, I had to go to the school board to say that I should be earning the same amount of money as my male buddy. And when I went to the board, they said, oh, well, that's because he's the man of the family. I said, but he doesn't have a family. He's as single as I am. Oh, that's a good thought. The next year, fortunately, the school board had changed its position and men and women were paid the same. That, I think, was my first successful experience in doing that. But the training in a debate team, I mean, we discussed the death penalty. We discussed the electoral college. We made decisions. We competed for the newspaper. So it starts early. And you have to encourage your kids to get involved, I think, then. And then it carries through, because what's important to you is what you're going to focus on.
So you became an activist early in life.
Early on. My mother would probably say I was born that way. But
well, you've been active, especially the last few years, in seeking a wild and scenic designation for the Crystal River. Why?
There's one river left in the state of Colorado that is non-diverted. And doesn't send water out of its watershed. And the Crystal River is the only one left. The Cashlapooter is a wild and scenic river. But it has some disturbances that were in it when it was determined to qualify for wild and scenic and recreational designation. I think that's a very ideal way to protect a river so that we can see a river in its wild form as it is without deterrence. There's a fear of government that gets in the way with individuals, but the Forest Service did the first step of the study, and we picked that up because the Forest Service was relooking at its designation. It still meets the criteria for wild and scenic river designation on the national level. Once you determine that, you can design an act that has to go to Congress to say that we want to protect the river in this state in its wild form. We are there. What we need to do is get support from individuals, from organizations, so that we can eventually get to Congress and get it passed in Congress to protect it so that there would be no dams, no diversions. Now, Bill Yoakum's led a battle to get rid of the permits to put dams on Crystal, so got some the ones that would have flooded Placida and flooded Redstone. Those two are gone, but there's still a fear that it could happen again. Wild and scenic designation protects the river, so I'm not done with that one yet.
All right, good. You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program for Land's Sake. Our guest today is Dorothea Ferris. How do we all work together, Dorothea, in today's divisive political environment, especially when you're trying to get the river to be designated wild and scenic? How do we all work together? I know one example you might want to tell us about is what's known as the cow stomp, and I'm sure our listeners are really interested in what that's all about.
That was a fun one. The key, I think, is to recognize that one point of view doesn't see all sides of the issue. It's like picking up a square and looking at the different sides, and each person sees it from his background and his perspective. And when the mine closed in Redstone and Coal Basin, some of the lands there had been modified to accommodate all the mining. And the rivers had been moved. The mines roads had been put in place. Some of it was doing damage to the river. And it just needed to be looked at. The Forest Service was interested in doing something about that. But given state of the Forest Service, there's often not enough money to do the things they wanted to do. So there are several groups that use that area. So you have recreationists, you have the ranchers, you have people who just want it to be fixed. The money was gone for a lot of fixing of the impacts of the mine. So what we did was talk to the Forest Service, talk to the ranchers, talk to the environmentalists, talk to the scientists who said, well, this is what it needs in the soil and so on, and put a plan together, and the Forest Service supported that plan. The jurisdiction said, you know, that sounds like a good idea. We'll put some money into that. So we were able to go to the counties and the cities and different groups and raise the money to do some modification of the soil. And the ranchers and the government and the environmentalists, and the people who got on the ground, and the people who were creating biochar, all got together and worked out a plan that the Forest Service can now use in other places to improve soil where it needs some improvement. It's not a brilliant new idea that was brought up, but it was new for us here, and it worked. So it made a change, I think, in the approach to restoration of land that is damaged, whether by mining or by other impacts. And the cow stomp, the ranchers provided the cows who were fenced in up in Coal Basin, and whose they had a little bit to eat, and they were fenced in, so that they fertilized the soil, they stomped it into the ground, and surprise of all surprises, the way they treated that land and the amount of water that was on that land, they could test and see which angle worked best and transfer that to other places. So it was really fun to watch an idea grow from the beginning thought about, do you think we could do anything like this in this area? To the point where, yeah, all these people want the same thing by doing it in different ways. And it got done. That was exciting to see. It was kind of fun.
And you were able to get the funding for it, and also to see how diverse groups of people can actually work together to get something done.
That was the best part.
Yeah,
that was the best part. Can I give one other example of that?
Sure,
the trail from Aspen to Glenwood Springs on the old railroad grade. Those of you who've been here for a while understand the complexity of what do we do with that right-of-way, you know. It was a train. It's not a train anymore. Will we need it as a train? The battle over, yes, we want it to be a train. No, we don't want trains going by. At any rate, I think you all are aware of the Rio Grande Trail and how successful it has been. Try thinking about getting nine jurisdictions in this valley, plus I don't know how many organizations and agencies to agree on a final plan. I think everyone gave up something that was our dream plan, but it's been successful. It will have to change. It's like other trails and other opportunities that we have that we're maybe battling over now, and we'll work out a good solution. And you know, sometimes when I ride Rafter, I think, gee, it'd be fun to get on one of these trains. We saw some incredible trains when we were trying to decide what to do. It'd be fun to get on one of those overhead trains that can shuttle us from one place to another. It would be fun. That trail works. It works for recreation. It works for business access. It works for hiking with the kids. So I'm really proud of that. We cut a lot of ribbons in those years. It was fun.
Well, you should be, and I want to thank you for that. I live just a few hundred feet, actually, from that trail where I live now, and we use it all the time. We go to the grocery store. We go have a beer at Beer Works and just take the dog on it, and it's a wonderful trail. I've been on the whole trail myself, mm-hmm. and it's amazing. So thank you. I want to say thank you for doing that.
A lot of people
were
involved in that. Yeah.
You bet. Tell us, Dorothea, how we get back to the give and take of government and citizen involvement.
Involvement, for one. You know, I hear people, almost every group I go to, I look around and we're older and gray-haired, and I keep thinking, where are the young people? I asked someone the other day on an issue we were talking about, I said, well, why don't we have a presentation meeting? And the story that came out of this younger but not kids group said, well, the last time we did that, three people showed up. There is so much happening. So much energy goes into activities and meetings and taking care of the kids and working to make enough money to pay to live here that there isn't that time. And, you know, I don't pick up my phone to get information. And I'm in a different era. I still want my records to be on paper so I can see it. So I understand that I'm in a minority there, but there is so much going on and so much for people to be involved in that it's hard to get young people involved. And they seem to want more activity than those of us who were willing to say, sit down, have a meeting, talk about it. And I think the key to getting involvement, which was part of your question, is to get all these people to sit down, say it's going to be a two-hour conversation and we're going to have a resolution when we're done about who's going to do what. And in 2 weeks when we come back, you're going to show how you accomplished that. I don't think we do enough of that. I think people walk out of meetings and say, well, I didn't get any direction about what I'm supposed to do. And maybe that comes from teaching high school kids. And I watched the government today. My seventh graders could have accomplished a lot more than I've seen accomplished recently. Because kids, you know, it's like being the leader of the ninth grade is more challenging in some ways than what I see adults doing today. And I think there have to be rules, there have to be the ways to do it. That way you can address somebody who has a totally different opinion from yours. You can do it with respect and tolerance. You might not go my way or your way, but you might find another door to open. I remember, and I have to mention this because most people know John Martin. John Martin and I both served on the State County Association Board. Almost never in agreement on an issue. But we would go sit down and work something out where we could both be okay. The one time an issue came up and we voted, John and I voted the same way. A family room of 63 counties were represented there. They broke into a cheer. It was the first time it had ever happened. And it worked. And it can work, but it takes a lot of work.
It does take a lot of work, doesn't it? And the word compromise has become dirty for some people, mm-hmm. but it takes compromising, doesn't it?
Maybe we need to look at it not as a compromise, but as the current next step.
So for the average person, if they just get involved, they can see things happen as you have in your career and your life?
Absolutely.
All right.
We're just in the middle.
I hope people are paying attention to that. What would you like to accomplish, Dorothea, with the rest of the time you have on Earth?
A recognition of place, I think. The fact that, you know, of course, a lot of the talk now is on climate change and how things are changing. But I think political changes, climate change, change in our communities. Redstone is not the Redstone it was when I taught here in 19, whatever it was, 59 to 61. Carbondale certainly isn't the same as it was when it had about 200 people here. But I think if we all have a recognition of our community, and I think that gets political as well as physical, as well as what is it we want. Not what it is that I want that meets my needs, but if we want to protect a community, you know, the books that are popular almost always have this town square and the cute little stores around it and a local school that everyone belongs to. And I think that's because in the back of our minds, that's really what we want. It's a lot of work to create a community. Communities don't just burst into place. And the town boards, sometimes you look at the paper, how many positions are open on boards, whether it's a historic board or the planning board or the recreation board, there are always positions open. It's a lot of hard work. If you join one of those boards, you need to be committed to time and activity and dealing with people that maybe sometimes you'd rather not have to deal with. But you do if you're all going to live in that community. So I think what I'd like to accomplish is just a recognition that we're blessed with a community that can still work. We haven't given up on this valley. I taught here when the state was mandating that each school district, Aspen, Basalt, Carbondale, and Glenwood, those separate districts had to become one. Well, Glenwood could stay on its own, but the other three were to become one district with one high school to which all students in high school would be bused. That almost, and it was a financial decision on the state level, that split communities apart. Basalt kids wouldn't talk to Carbondale kids in the classroom because you like them better than me, kind of thing. And that was not a good community-wide decision because nobody on the state level asked what we as a community wanted. Aspen fought hard to stay out of it. Kids from Ashcroft to bus to Basalt was a bit difficult. So that involvement and that belief that we're fortunate to be here is what we need to go by.
Right now, the community in Carbondale is a great community. It feels like a community. The sense of place is intact here. In the next couple of minutes that we have, how do we keep that?
How do we keep that? Wow. By, I think, talking. I don't have a problem with this. Talking to anybody who wants to have a conversation with it. I'm talking to someone tomorrow about what's the status of our water and our rivers in this valley. I was involved with the castle because I worked at the castle for 5 years. And I believe that to protect the history of a place, you have to enjoy it and use it. So it's that involvement and that finding what it is that really turns you on, that you believe in, and getting involved and sharing what you can. Everyone has something different to share. There is no one in this town who has nothing to offer any of these groups. And I think it's a point of, so if I have anything to accomplish, it's to get more people involved so that we don't all look like the gray-haired old men who shouldn't be there anymore.
All right. Very good. What words of wisdom do you have in the next minute that we have left here?
Remember to take a look around and remember how blessed we are to be here. You also have been here and I think find the relationships. All of a sudden you run into someone, you say, oh, last time I saw you, we were talking about something else. So it's fascinating. You worked with the Cow Stomp in its early stages.
I did, yes.
You worked with historical societies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've got to mention the historical societies. It's key that we remember who we were. This land, when Hayden went through here, the Utes still lived here. Hayden said this was the most complex valley he had ever surveyed.
Right.
And the beauty and the extent and the people who lived here. And I think we need to find out how we can recognize the growth of our valley from Hayden's time through early mining and mining and the Ute Indian Nation and our nation, and how we can protect it and take good care.
Well, thank you, Dorothea, very much for being here with us today. And thank you for listening to KDNK. Our next show is November, second Tuesday in November at 4:30. Until then, whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.